From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
What really matters when we start seeds? What tweaks to our process or our gear can actually move the needle from so-so results, or worse, to closer to pro? My friend Joe Lample wondered that too and undertook batch after batch of experiments to test a lot of the conventional wisdoms out there, many of which conflict with one another, by the way. And I couldn't wait to hear what he learned that we can each put to use in our own pre-spring seed starting adventures. So more in a moment, but first this message.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, your go-to resource for books in gardening and nature. Whether you're a new gardener, a professional at the top of your field, or a reader interested in the wonders of the natural world, their books are there to help you grow. TimberPress.com.
You probably know Joe Lample as host of the popular PBS series Growing a Greener World and the Joe of JoeGardner.com website and podcast. And he's also the creator of Organic GardeningAcademy.com with a suite of online classes, including one about to debut on seeds, which we'll talk about more in a minute. But meantime, welcome back, Joe. How are you?
Margaret, I'm fine. I'm trying to hang in there, but I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
I'm surprised you have anything left in you after trialing all those damn seeds. So, yeah, oh, he's giddy boy. So you've been growing from seed confidently, or at least I thought so, for years.
Right.
And then you sort of went wild this last year with these extra trials. And I mean, you know, I would look at your Instagram photos and videos, and you were like in this jungle of seedlings. And there was somehow, however, a method to the madness. So tell us the truth. How many seedlings did you grow? And explain sort of the mad scientist process that went into preparing to do this course on seeds.
I think I'm as guilty as anybody when my exuberance and over-enthusiastic nature takes over. So, you know, I had I lost count of the pack of seeds that I had, Margaret, and each seed packet has a minimum of 25 seeds. So I would say I was in the neighborhood of a couple thousand seedlings every round of trials. So about 52 to 60 seed trays, and each tray had at least 18 cells, and some had 72 cells.
Oh,
so
goodness.
You can understand why I'm a little delirious. I sort of lost count and got lost in the jungle, but it's not a bad thing.
So were there parts of the seed starting process that you were particularly determined to sort of get to the bottom of, like things that had maybe stymied you year after year, or that were just super confusing, like in five different resources or different books or online sites you'd see five different recommendations? You know, were there,
were there
like certain things you were trying to figure out in particular?
Yeah, a couple in particular. And one certainly was the lighting. You know, lighting is continuing to evolve. And, you know, with the LED grow lights, it's not just that they're LED anymore. It's what spectrum of LED light do you want, and how strong do you want it, and how high do you hang it, and how do your plants respond, and is it worth it to spend all that extra money on a super powered LED light if you're just growing seedlings to put outside 6 weeks later? I mean, I had so many questions, and that's the thing. I'm such a curious gardener myself. I just feel like I got to know everything, and why not share it with the rest of the people once
right.
I find out? I say I'm the crash test gardener, you know?
Oh, boy. Well, a number of years, speaking of light, so we can start there. So a number of years ago, Dr. Thomas Borkman of Cornell, he's a crop physiologist who studies mm-hmm. the effects of environmental stimuli on plant growth and their development, particularly in vegetables. And that's his whole career. And he has like a laboratory. And his specialty is, you know, vegetable seedlings, like how it's a physiology of how they grow and how can we do better with them and so forth. And he advises, you know, the nursery and farm agriculture industries. And he told me that in the home seed starting environment, the number one thing we can do to improve results and especially prevent leggy seedlings is to improve the light.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of other factors that affect how seedlings develop. But the light was the thing. And you know, he was like, Margaret, no, you know, even though the windowsill looks bright, it's not bright. And
right.
tell them that the old fluorescents are a lot less light than the T5s. And and now he would say, and the LEDs. But what did you end up kind of, did you come to a conclusion about light? Because, I mean, clearly I'm on the fence. You can hear it in my voice.
Right.
You know, I'm not changing out my T5 fluorescence, which I have mirrored, you know, what would you say, reflective interior. The interior of the hood is reflective, so you get a little extra light.
Yes.
And I do really well with those, and I did well with regular fluorescents for a million years, you know, a shop light for a million years before that. But I don't know, like, where are you, where, what did you try, and what are you feeling about it? Because I know you had crazy pictures of, like,
I did.
Is this your basement, or where is this place that you do all this?
This, I call it my seed starting room, but it's just the, I guess, the breezeway from going down into the basement and heading out to the door to my garden. So there's this about 10-foot wide space, and it's probably about 25 feet long. And so that's my laboratory for starting all these seed trays.
Okay.
And it's right outside my office. And so the challenge for me is trying to get through that area without getting distracted and getting sucked into the world of watching seeds germinate. I'll stand there for 10 minutes just seeing if I can notice a seedling move just because it's grown a little bit in those 10 minutes that I was there.
Right.
But to your question, I did 14 different light trials. And so I tried every type of – not every type of light there is. There's so many out there.
Yeah,
but I went from the classic old-fashioned, old-school shop light to the shop lights with the LED inserts to shop light LED lights that all come together as one unit. So you can't change out the lights. You get what you get. I varied the light spectrum of the fluorescent tubes. I went from a, you know, low Kelvin of 3000 to a high Kelvin of 6500 to test color temperatures. I went to the LED lights, and I went to the type that has just what appears to be a clear white light, which is just what's called full spectrum, which is all the frequencies that the human eye sees.
Right.
And I did dual band LEDs, which is focusing on the red and the blue, which we now know plants respond best to from a vegetative standpoint. So I trialed those against everything else. And then the grand finale was I splurged for a really expensive LED full spectrum grow light that cost $300. And it was 2,000 watts. And I'm like, wow, this is a big light. And it really was. It was 48 inches wide and or long and 20 inches wide. So it covered the whole shelf. And so over multiple trials, I put them all up against each other head to head. And if you're asking for my conclusion, it's fascinating because on the super expensive grow light, it really does perform uniquely. And if you're trying to have things go to fruit or flower indoors, you need a light like that.
Right.
But if you're just trying to get seedlings coddled along for 4 to 6 weeks, whatever light you have can work. What I learned, Margaret, is that you just have to learn how your light works with the plants that you're growing underneath them and learn how to position those lights over the plant and learn how many hours a day you need to have that light on. And how does that plant get the optimal amount of light coming out of what you have?
Right.
So you don't necessarily need to go buy one. You just need to understand a better relationship between the light and the plant and how to get the most out of both.
Right. And I just think I'm just like if we had some sound effects, I would go ding, 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 ding. You know, I'd love that answer, right?
Uh-huh.
Because I, again, you know, I'm an old gardener. And, you know, 40-something years ago, I was using shop hood with a cool and a one cool light and one warm white fluorescent. And, I mean, they hardly put out anything if you compare them to the sun outside on a day in May when seedlings would germinate themselves in nature, as Dr. Borkman, again, at Cornell explained to me. But it's a lot of light if you know how to use it. And the things that you have to know is how warm is what's being emitted from that tube. So how close can you get? Because you want to get close, but not so close that you toast the babies, you know, or cook them. You know what I mean? And the LEDs are cooler, are they? They don't have the heat emission. Is that the case?
So they're considered more efficient. So
right.
for the whatever wattage they are, they're considered more efficient because when the power is coming out of the light, it's going in two places. It's going to put out the light and it's going to put out heat. And so the less heat, the more light and vice versa.
Right.
And LEDs do a better job of being more efficient in that they're putting out more light. But the thing about what we often misunderstand about those lights is that we think brighter is better and that, you know, plants perceive light the same way we do, but they don't. You know,
no.
they respond completely differently. So just because a light is brighter doesn't necessarily make it better.
Right. So again, I'm feeling happy with my, I don't know if they're, you know, 5 or 7 year old T5s. I'm not talking about that I've been running them for the same bulb necessarily for 7 years nonstop. Because again, I might use them for 6 weeks 12 hours a day, right, in
right.
once a year for that little period, you know, because I'm overlapping a bunch of different crops.
Yeah.
But that's it. You know, it's not, I'm not doing a million things. I'm not doing as many 52 trays times a billion seeds like you did. And obviously you change out the bulb when the bulb is, mm-hmm. you know, you have to read the instructions and see what the life of the bulb is. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, if you really wanted to geek out on that, there's an instrument that you can get that measures that light quality around
yes.
your plants. It's not for the everyday seed starter who doesn't want to invest a minimum of $150. But there are tools out there, which I invested in because I was determined to really measure the details.
Right.
And that's one way that you can do it is those light readings go down as the bulbs get older. And that's one indication, but probably not the most practical things for people to do. But using your eyes and looking at how the plants respond will really give you lots of clues. You might not be able to detect it in the perception of the brightness of that light to the human eye, but your plants will tell you. It's amazing how much they'll tell you if you just learn to communicate with them.
So roughly speaking, I mean, like that big $300 bulb that you got or whatever,
mm-hmm.
you know, that was probably higher above the plants then?
Yeah. I couldn't get it high enough, Margaret.
Right.
Instructions on that came with it said, you know, start off with the lights 24 inches above the plants. So I did that, and initially I got picture perfect seedlings. But you know, the longer those seedlings were under those lights, the more they showed that they were uncomfortable. They weren't responding as you would expect. They weren't filling out. It's almost like they didn't want to grow anymore. They didn't want to get any closer to the light.
Right.
So that's an example of, you know, paying attention to your plant response to the light. And so I raised the lights up. And I got the plants responded favorably to that. But as the plants got taller, they again kind of shut down. And then they showed other symptoms that told me the light was too bright. And so the bottom line on that, Margaret, I just couldn't get the plants far enough away from
right,
the light.
Right. Not in your home environment in this
right.
seed room.
Right.
Yeah. So a lot of listeners probably have either plain fluorescence in a shop hood or like I have the smaller, more higher output fluorescence, the high output fluorescence like T5s.
Uh-huh.
How close or far away would you say those would be? Because I've always kept them within a couple of inches of the tops of the plants. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, right,
yeah.
Exactly. So that, it depends on the light, of course. But a HOT5, which is what you have, doesn't sit as close, should not sit as close to the tops of the plants as the traditional
right.
Fluorescent. Because it does put out a little more heat and it is more efficient. So you can't tell that from looking at it, but you will tell from the plant response. So my sweet spot above the tops of the plants on my HOT5s was about 6 inches above
six.
The top of the foliage.
Cool. Okay, great. I'm happy to know that.
Which is about 5 inches higher than the fluorescent, the classic T12 fluorescent lights.
Right, which are really close. We put those really close.
Right.
Yeah. So let's just move on. I mean, there's lots to learn. And again, you're going to have this whole course coming up and we'll tell people about that. But that includes more on lighting, I'm sure. But just so we don't use up all our time on lighting. I mean, watering is another thing that confounds
yes.
people and also can cause a lot of problems. And
yes.
and especially the combination of, I think, and again, this was from the doctor, you know, the professor at Cornell, and he was like, you know, if you're using a heat mat, a propagation mat, he said the reason they call it a germinating mat is it's only for germinating. Get the seedlings out of there the minute they poke up, you know, and get that dome off. Don't cook them.
Yeah.
You know, especially get the heat mat out away if you've got that dome on. I mean, because you're causing this horrible conducive to disease, et cetera, like steam bath, right? I mean, it's
– That's right. That's he's saying all the right things, but that heat mat is there just to aid with germination.
Correct.
And it speeds up the germination time by anywhere from a day to several days because plants have an ideal germination range. And if you can get the ambient temperature or the soil temperature closer to that range that they prefer, they're going to germinate faster. But once they germinate, I remove those humidity domes right away because
absolutely.
If you don't, you trap too much humidity around the base of the plant, and then they're subjected to a fungal disease called damping off, and that's the number one killer with young seedlings, and it comes from too much moisture around the base of the plant.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right. So it's not like we want to have them in like this terrarium, for goodness sake.
No.
Right? Right. Like no, N-O.
Right. Not ferns.
But you see pictures all the time of online and stuff of like seedlings growing in these, again, it's like a terrarium with the hood on, and it's crazy.
Yeah, that's not best practices for starting seedlings.
By contrast, I see in your pictures you got fans going in the place, don't you?
Absolutely. For the very reason of helping to ward off that condition of damping off, because if you can keep air moving across the base of the soil right where those seedlings are, you greatly reduce the risk that you're going to have any sort of fungal disease. Plus, air circulation, period, is good to have around plants, and so it doesn't hurt to have those fans there. I highly recommend. I put those on the must-haves list of things that you need okay. when you start your seeds.
And they're not on high, like blowing the plants over. They're right. It's just kind of moving the air gently around the room.
Right. If you can see the seedling on the far end of your seed tray barely moving, that's enough. So okay. I have my fans on low setting. They're small, tiny little fans.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, but I just like to see that the air is moving across, and I know that that's enough to do the job.
So watering then, mm-hmm. where I derailed from, but do you use capillary mats below your seedling trays? Are you hand? What are you doing? Are you misting? What was your decision about watering? Uh-oh, this is a mess.
No,
I can tell this was a crazy experiment.
No, yeah, that was definitely part of the trials. I wanted to compare top watering versus bottom watering versus self-watering capillary mats.
Right.
And the top watering, it depends on the types of lights that you're using, first of all. If you're using those fluorescent lights that sit right on top of your plants, it's really hard to top water
yeah.
or water overhead.
You
got to
move the tray out.
To everything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Plus you're beating those little seedlings down when the water droplets hit it. So
yeah.
I prefer to bottom water, which is just pouring water into a solid tray that the seed tray nests into.
Yes.
But the problem with that, Margaret, as you probably know, is if you bottom water, there's a level of water in that bottom tray, and if the seed tray is nesting into that, then you have a portion of your root mass or your soil sitting in that water too, and some of those roots can just be underwater and drowning. And so although plants, young seedlings, love water and they respond to it well, too much water can cause them to respond too quickly to the growth, and they get out of proportion and they become too tall and too soft relative to their girth, and they can snap and break. That's one reason why I don't
right.
just bottom water. And the other thing is plants respond worse to overwatering than underwatering.
Yes.
So if
and,
they're on one side or the other.
And seeds need mm-hmm. water to germinate more than seedlings need as much. Like once they're up and growing, you want to back off a little bit. You don't want to, wilt them. But seeds, on the other hand, you dry out a half-germinated seed and you kill it.
That's right.
Do you know what I mean? So it's wetter before germination and it's less wet and more careful with your timing of your watering once it's up, I think.
Absolutely. There's a sweet spot to how much moisture should be in that soil to initiate germination within the seed, because the seed needs that and air for this
yeah.
exchange that takes place in the seed to kick off the germination. But it
yeah.
needs that moisture for sure.
Yeah. So yeah. Did you end up tossing anything or buying anything that you were super glad? I mean, you bought a lot of different things, but is there something that you're going to use every single year from now on because it's just the greatest thing ever? Like, do you know
uh-huh.
what I mean? Any piece of gear that will yeah. now become a standard or?
Yeah. Yes. Margaret,
okay.
how do you hang your grow light over your seed trays? What do you use? A chain or do you use those ratchet pulleys?
My incredible neighbor, Tom, who's a master carpenter and used to build Steinway pianos. He made me this fabulous thing that adjusts on like pulleys.
Yep.
Yeah. And it's, I bet you're using something like that.
I am. I'm using those ratchet pulleys where I used to
yeah.
use those small chains with the S hooks all the
yes.
time.
Yes. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Every time the plant grew, you had to raise the, mess with the chains. And
then try to get it level.
Right. And good luck on that. And
yeah.
good luck trying to keep that S hook from coming detached and the lamp falling into your plants and crushing your seedlings. So what changed my life a few years ago were those ratchet pulleys that, on a thin cord, you just tug on it lightly and it click, click, clicks
yeah.
up the lamp. Super easy. And when I show people that, it blows their mind.
Yeah.
It's like they're game changing.
And it's not expensive. It's not a $1 million thing at all.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
And there's one other piece of equipment. I love my dual timers, which has basically eight outlets in it, two strips of four.
Oh.
One side is powered 24/7. So it's not impacted by the timer. The other side is directly related to the timer. So in other words, you can use that one strip of power outlets to drive your timer-sensitive things like your
grow lights. Oh, okay. I get it. Mm-hmm.
And then the other side has your fans and your heat mats or whatever else you have plugged in that you don't want to necessarily go on and off during the day.
Right, right. Yeah. Well, what I'll do is I'll get with the transcript on awaytogarden.com of this conversation, I'll make sure to get the ones that you've had good success with, the proper links if people are interested.
Okay.
Yeah,
good.
Yeah. So we have, you know, maybe three, four minutes left, but are there also, did you have any like big ahas about timing or anything else that, do you know what I mean, that's not gear related, but it's just, yeah.
I did.
Yeah.
First of all, timing with the lights, you know, you don't, people, I think more people than not leave their lights on about 16 hours a day, and that's a good rule of thumb. But again, it depends on how much light is getting to your plants over a 24-hour period. That's really what you need to find out. And there's ways that you can do it beyond the scope of this conversation. But in general, you can do it 16 hours. But I did find that when I left the lights on for 24 hours a day with a reasonably bright light, it was more light than the plant wanted. And it showed me that in ways that it just kind of shut down and it wasn't as vigorous as my lights that were getting. There was more time of darkness, you know. And so timing there was one thing. And then the other thing is, I think we get so anxious to start our seeds in the wintertime because we just want something to do. And
don't we?
Yeah. But we tend to start our seeds a little too early. But when you have those seedlings growing over a 4 to 6 to 8 week period, the longer they're in that artificial environment before you can plant them outside, the more stress they become because they're not getting what they need as they get bigger that we can provide indoors. And so I think it's important for people to understand timing of how long they really think is realistic for their plants to be inside before they can take them outside, and try to resist the urge to start too early. It's better, what I concluded for sure, again, it's better to start a little bit later than a little bit earlier.
I'm happy with a 6 week tomato seedling.
Yeah.
That's a little shorter and stouter than I am worrying in those extra 2 weeks indoors for an 8 week seedling that it's going to go amiss. Do you know what I mean?
And I know exactly what you mean. And then the plant fully takes off outside.
Yeah,
once it gets
absolutely. So yeah. I wait later than a lot of people wait where I live, you know. So tell us, so all of this experimentation is going to lead to this course, Master Seed Starting, I think it's called.
Yeah.
You're taking registration now around the time that this is end of January in 2019 when we're playing the show.
The course launched today, Margaret.
And today. So today is that we're taping this is the 30th. Are we on the 30th today?
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And so people sign up and then they take it at their own pace. Is that what the pace
that's
is?
The beauty of an online course.
Okay. All right.
Go anywhere to take it and
okay.
you take it at your own pace and you have it forever so you can refer back to it. And then when we update, you get those updates free too because we keep it current. You know, things are changing, but we want to keep everybody current as well. And so online courses provide opportunities that books just can't do. You know, you and I are both authors and we love our books.
Right. But once it's put to bed.
Yeah.
So, all right. So obviously with the transcript, I'm going to give the links to all that so people can explore, find out if they want to participate. You're in the Atlanta area. Have you started any seeds yet? Not for your crazy experiments, but for this year's garden?
You know, that's a great question. Besides the thousands that I've started already for the course,
right.
I'm going to start around March 1st. I'm going to give myself a breather and start March 1st. I had a momentary thought of just taking a break this year now that I've done all these seedlings. I can't do it. I love starting seeds, and so I'll be back at it March 1st.
Okay. Well, Joe Lampel, now the creator of Master Seed Starting course, in addition to all his other accomplishments, Growing a Greener World and books and JoeGardner.com and the Joe Gardner podcast. Thank you so much for making the time. And I'm not laughing at you. I'm laughing with you because I know how it feels to be crazy about plants.
We're two peas in a pod, Margaret.
I know we are. Separated at birth. Separated at germination. I'll talk to you soon, Joe.
All right.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, your go-to resource for books in gardening and nature. Whether you're a new gardener, a professional at the top of your field, or a reader interested in the wonders of the natural world, their books are there to help you grow. TimberPress.com.
And I hope I'll talk to all of you again soon, too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of this show on Stitcher or Spotify or iTunes. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or on Facebook and on Instagram as @awaytogarden. Happy gardening meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.